Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're glad to have you with us. It's the member drive, and so we're doing Best of Access Utah. Today we have selected a couple of excerpts from science programs. We'll hear from Timothy Weingard talking about the mosquito. Subtitle of his book is A Human History of Our Deadliest Predator. We'll also hear from Wayne Wurzbach from USU, who's an expert on the Great Salt Lake, and to talk about the desiccation of the lake and the fascinating brine shrimp. Those are a couple of programs from which we'll hear excerpts. And we have with us for the hour Matthew LaPlante, who is with the Journalism and Communication Department at Utah State University. Matthew, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Matthew, you are a journalism professor. You've had a career in journalism, but also science, a lot of science.
A lot of science.
In your background
lately,
and the
last few years. Yeah.
So we'll put in a plug here at the top for your program on Utah Public Radio, Undisciplined.
Fridays at 2 p.m.
Yeah.
Every week. We bring together two scientists to talk about their disciplines and try to make interdisciplinary connections.
So it's a fascinating, fascinating things happen, right? You get
Absolutely.
People from completely different.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Fields,
I mean,
right?
we've had sociologists and chemists, and we've had anthropologists and geographers. And it really, you know, the show really actually came out of an experience I had my very first week as a professor at Utah State University. I was standing in line to buy a coffee, and the line was moving slowly, and you know, started making small talk with the person in front of me and the person behind me. And they were two scientists from completely different disciplines. And I'm a journalist by trade. And by the time we had gotten to the front of the line where we could buy our coffee, we had solved all the world's problems. It was great. And I walked away from there. This is my first week on campus. I walked away from there going, oh, this is what a university is like. And I was so, like, man, I have lucked out. This is the best place in the world. And then I came to found out that that's actually not what happens on a university campus. Most of the time, we're very siloed in our individual disciplines. We talk largely, if not almost entirely, to people who study the same sorts of things that we study, who teach the same sort of things that we teach. We talk to students almost entirely who are studying the things that we teach. We are so siloed. And it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking to see that. And then so as the years went by and I started thinking about that, and especially as I started moving into a career as a science communicator, I thought, we can do something about this. We can recreate that coffee line. And we can do it every single week. And we do. We do it here on UPR.
So you have you know, the first scientist to speak about his or her research, right?
Right,
with the other scientists listening in, and then vice versa. But then the last part of the show is them speaking.
Yeah, this is a half-hour show, give or take, and so we spend the first 10 minutes with one scientist talking about a recent publication that they have usually. And we work really hard to make it accessible. And it's actually not that hard. I mean, like, people think, oh my gosh, like, how do you translate this? Does it take some special? It doesn't. It just takes a person who's willing to communicate and a person, and this is my role, who's willing to ask questions and ask follow-up questions that help people understand at a level that all of us can understand. And then we do the same thing with the other scientist. And while that's happening, the other guest is listening in. They're taking a few notes, and I tell them, in particular, if I don't ask a question that you really want to know, write that down, because in the last 10 minutes of the show, we open up the conversation. And what I tell my guests is, at its best, this conversation is going to be between you two. And I'm just going to sit here, and sometimes I do. I sit in the chair you're sitting in right now, Tom, and I lean back. I'm not even close to the microphone, because these people are having at it. And it's like introducing two friends who you know are awesome people and you just know are going to hit it off. And it happens almost every week. Now, sometimes they don't get along, mm-hmm. which is also interesting. Mm-hmm. But usually they have so much to talk about and so many connections that you wouldn't even think about. We've had people who study the movements of people in response to pollution on the show with people who study bacterial cultures and cellular cultures at a microscopic level, and these people find the most incredible connections between one another, and it's just it's fantastic. It really is.
It occurs to me it's not a big leap from siloed professors speaking to each other to siloed us, speaking to each other, and I think that's the hope, right? That we can you know, take this concept, you know, and heal our nation. That's grandiose, but boy, wouldn't that be great?
Well, and there's nothing more important right now. There's really, I mean, like, look, we're not talking to each other anymore. We've vilified each other. We've decided that there is absolute right and absolute wrong, and that if somebody believes differently than us, then there's just no point. And one of, I think, the promises of public radio is this is still a place where I think that most people can feel comfortable turning on the radio dial and not feeling like they're vilified and not feeling like they're being made to be bad or being made to be wrong. Now, look, there are people, and generally these people exist on the extremes, whose values are so out of line with everybody else that it's really hard to see them as anything other than, like, out on that extreme. But the vast majority of people, wherever you lie on the political spectrum, you know, these are people who care about their communities, they care about their families, they care about their neighbors, they care about making the world a better place, they care about their environment. These are people who really actually, it's not that hard to find something to come together on. But what they need is a space where they feel listened to, where they feel heard, and where they have a common language. And one of the things that public radio does is it creates a common language and talking points, really, for a community conversation.
And here's how to support this kind of radio. It's really, I use the word radio, media, it's really community, right? It's a UPR community. Supporting this community, helping to make it strong, you can go to upr.org. Or 800-826-1495. Support this kind of programming, this community, this place where we can talk. We don't have to agree, right? We can disagree, but in a way that connects us.
This is a really safe place to disagree, too. You will not look. There are other places on the radio dial, and there are plenty of other places in media, online, and on television where, if you really want to watch people yelling at each other, that's a place to go, right? It's like combat. It's like MMA out there. It's like a combat sport. You just don't find that on public radio. People don't yell at each other. Even people who disagree don't yell at each other. They listen, they debate, they argue, but there's that vitriol, that really toxic level of argumentation where we're just trying to win a fight, doesn't exist on public radio. It's one of the last spaces in media where it doesn't exist. And if you value that, if you want to be able to have that refuge, and you want it to continue and you want it to be a robust refuge, the way to do that is to make sure you're contributing.
We are looking for 10 new members to Utah Public Radio today. It's New Member Challenge Day. Lauren and Andy Keller have put up $1,000 if we can get 10 new members to Utah Public Radio. So certainly renew your membership. But if you have a friend, perhaps, who's lurking and listening and or maybe just discovered Utah Public Radio, well, I'll speak directly to you. We'd love to have you on board. Call the number and become a member. If you have a friend in that situation, reach out to them. 10 new members today to get that $1,000. So, Matthew, I guess the numbers?
The number is 1-800-826-1495 or upr.org. I can pretty much guarantee it will only take a couple of minutes either way. We've made it really simple for you, but public radio, public media has done a really good job over the last few years of making this process really painless. And after that, all you have to do is sit back and enjoy and know that you played a part in bringing this content to your radio dial.
And here's an excerpt from one of those programs that you made possible. And we do try to do some science. Probably should do more. This is what we hear most from listeners. They want more science. Had an opportunity to talk to with Timothy Weingard, The Mosquito, title of the book, subtitled A Human History of Our Deadliest Predator. And mosquito is by far our human's deadliest predator. So here's just a little excerpt from that book. And before we get into the effects of the mosquito, I was fascinated by how the mosquito bites me.
All right. So I had an eye injury. Let me get my cheaters on here. I had an eye injury the other day.
Oh, okay.
So. All right, I'm ready.
Okay, so page 7, just the second paragraph. It's nearing dusk, and then completing that paragraph over the page.
Okay. It is nearing dusk, her favorite time to feed. Although you heard her droning arrival, she gently lands on your ankle without detection, as she usually bites close to the ground. It's always a female, by the way. She conducts a tender probing 10-second reconnaissance looking for a prime blood vessel. With her backside in the air, she steadies her crosshairs and zeroes in with 6 sophisticated needles. She inserts 2 serrated mandible cutting blades, much like an electric carving knife with 2 blades shifting back and forth, and saws into your skin, while 2 other retractors open a passage for the proboscis, a hypodermic syringe that emerges from its protective sheath. With this draw, she starts to suck 3 to 5 milligrams of your blood, immediately excreting its water while condensing its 20% protein content. All the while, a 6th needle is pumping in saliva that contains an anticoagulant, preventing your blood from clotting at the puncture site. This shortens her feeding time, lessening the likelihood that you feel her penetration and splatter across your ankle. The anticoagulant causes an allergic reaction, leaving an itchy bump as her parting gift. The mosquito bite is an intricate and innovative feeding ritual required for reproduction. She needs your blood to grow and mature her eggs.
So you go on to talk about some misconceptions. Tell me a little bit about that. You say it is true that mosquitoes searches out type O blood over other types.
Yeah, there's some misconceptions about why or who gets bitten more than others. Some of those myths where, you know, we've heard that blondes and the lighter your hair and the lighter the pigmentation in your skin, the more you get bitten. That's not true. But she bites everybody. That's just the inherent nature of the little beast. But she does play favorites. Unfortunately, roughly 85% of what makes you alluring or less alluring to mosquitoes is pre-hardwired in your genetic circuit board. So, for example, blood type O is her vintage of choice over types A or B or their blend. And a lot of it depends on the chemicals and bacteria in and on your skin. So lactic acid, for example, a person's natural emissions of carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide magnetizes mosquitoes. The bacteria on our feet are a mosquito aphrodisiac. So there's a few things that, you know, in your genetic makeup that make you appealing or less appealing to mosquitoes. Now, some of the external factors, she hunts by both sight and smell, so bright colors obviously attract mosquitoes. The carbon dioxide is another one, so if you're exercising, you're huffing and puffing more and drawing in mosquitoes. And we're not sure why this one is, but she also has an affinity for beer drinkers. So some of your listeners may not enjoy that fact, but that's, you know, the research has shown that she's attracted to beer drinkers, and we're not quite sure why yet.
So what can we do? What should we do? Get the spray, I guess? And
I mean, there's certain things that may or may not work. I had somebody tell me that they stuff Bounty dryer sheets in their pockets, and I've never heard that one, or I'd be buying stocks in, you know, Bounty dryer sheets.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they'd be a worldwide bestseller. But I think throughout history, if we look, people have tried all sorts of things to avoid mosquitoes or treat their diseases. At the end of the day, we can douse ourselves in lamp oil and fortify ourselves with tents and screens. But because she needs that blood to reproduce and carry on her species, she'll find any exposed, essentially, chink in our armor or our Achilles heel. And we've all doused ourselves in DEET and missed that one tiny spot, and she always seems to find that.
And if you see those clouds of mosquitoes, that is likely reproduction happening.
Yeah, so as I said, males don't bite. They drink nectar and then help reproduce, obviously. Not just mosquitoes, but insects. The males gather in swarms when they're ready to mate, and they find a prominent feature, and that could be a chimney, a telephone pole, an antenna, and oftentimes it's us. So that swarm of bugs circling over your head, you're not paranoid or imagining it, that you move and they follow you, take it as a compliment. They're using you as a swarm marker to signal females to come, that they're ready to breed.
Hmm. And so the females fly into that swarm and find a mate, do they?
Yep, they fly in and find a mate, and males will mate frequently during their short life, but females only need to mate once, and they essentially store the sperm. It's quite amazing, and dispense it piecemeal for separate birthings of eggs for as long as that female lives.
Hmm. And a fairly short lifetime, right, for mosquito?
It depends on the species, obviously, and it depends on temperature, and there's obviously other factors. But in general, it's a few weeks. They can live a couple months, but generally speaking, it's a couple weeks.
Now, this sentence from your introduction, and then I want to go to break and come back and discuss this. You say our history in the world we know or think we know would be completely unrecognizable if there were no mosquito. We might as well live on a foreign planet in a galaxy far, far away. I think we've all fantasized. Life would be so much better without mosquitoes, right? And it may
not for them, but I suppose for us, yes.
Yeah. It may well be, but you're saying, boy, our history, the world we knew, the world we have, would be very, very different. And that is just a segment from my conversation with Timothy Weingard. The book is The Mosquito, A Human History of Our Deadliest Predator, and illustrative of science programs that we do here on, episodes that we do here on Utah Public Radio and Access Utah. We're looking for your support for this kind of programming. And if you renew your membership in the fall, now's the time, of course. If you could see your way clear to giving a little extra gift, that would be wonderful. We're a bit behind on our overall goal, and we want to make that by the end of the member drive. And today is New Member Day at Utah Public Radio. We definitely need you as a new member. So if you're a potential new member, never pledged to Utah Public Radio, love to have you on board. You can help us to get to $1,000. It's a new member challenge from Lauren and Andy Keller. $1,000. If we can get 10 new members today. So you can really help us there. And if you're an ongoing member, maybe reach out to a friend that you know listens and encourage them to become a new member at whatever level, and that'll help us to get to that $1,000. Our thanks to Lauren and Andy Keller for that that challenge. Here's the number, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495, or upr.org, upr.org. We have with us Matthew LaPlante from Journalism Department, and upcoming we'll hear an excerpt from a conversation with USU's Wayne Wurtzbaugh about the Great Salt Lake and the brine shrimp. More following this break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we have with us for the hour Matthew LaPlante, who is, I'm not sure what flavor professor you are.
I am. I'm the associate flavor professor.
Associate. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We haven't had that conversation before. Associate professor of journalism in the Journalism and Communications Department at Utah State University. For people who, I guess, maybe forget, you have a background in the military journalism, right?
So I was a national security reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune for a number of years. Before that, I covered public safety in Utah. Before that, I covered courts in Oregon. And before that, I was a sports reporter. My first job was covering 2A high school sports in a little farming town in rural Oregon.
Wow, that I did not know. Yeah, 2A sports. All right. Sometimes those are the smaller schools are, you know.
Oh,
it's
a
different experience.
It's
yeah.
Such a delay. It's really one of the best jobs I ever had in my life, and it didn't pay much, and the working hours weren't great because, you know, it's nights. You just cover high school sports. You're working at night. But it was, you know, I got paid to sit on the bleachers and watch baseball games and hang out and watch volleyball matches, and it was absolutely delightful.
Yeah. Well, we have a rural focus here at Utah Public Radio. We try to cover the entire state. I've done extensive travels this summer with our StoryCorps' One Small Step project. It's just been delight. I pause when I say that because it wore me out that
sure
traveling, but it was delightful to meet people.
Yeah, well, that's what travel does.
Just to be in these towns,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's what travel does to you. You get done with it, and you're worn out, and you're tired, but if you've done it right, you feel so successful and so new and so whole. And I've found that in my career that, you know, every time I'm on the road, you know, and the older I get too, you know, my body starts to hurt, my brain starts to get tired, but the stimulus of going out and finding new stories and meeting new people and being able to share with our world something from the greater world is just, it's so worth it. It's absolutely worth it. And it feels like the end of a hard day's work.
Yeah. So we're focusing today on Access Utah and science. And this is the biggest thing I get from listeners. And so we try to respond is, could you do more science? I really enjoy the science programs.
This is great. This is great to hear. I love hearing this. And I know that it's true. You know, a while back, even before I was focused on science, I had heard, you know, that while news consumption in a lot of areas was down, people were reading less political news, they were reading less business news, they were even reading less community news, or consuming it, listening to it, watching it. The market for science news has only expanded because people want to be odd. And what is there left on our world that really awes us like Discovery does? It's absolutely amazing, and it's good to know that people want that. And I think UPR does a good job of providing that.
So what is it? You mentioned the word Discovery. Is that in Discovery? I guess the public radio listeners are famous for learning, want to learn, right?
Yeah.
Lifelong learning. Science is a particular subset of that.
Well,
why do you think this hunger?
Yeah, I think we have this ethos in this country. I think it's everywhere, but we have this explorer's ethos, right? We always want to push into new frontiers. And, you know, as we've pushed into just about every frontier left that's very accessible on our planet, we're still desiring that search, that moment where we see something that maybe nobody else has seen before. And we do that through the very large and the very small now, right? Like when we're diving into the human genome, when we are exploring the outer cosmos, these are the new frontiers. And maybe we can't physically put ourselves there like the explorers of old would put themselves out west or out onto the oceans or up into the mountains. But being able to experience that thing that those explorers experience, which is, I am seeing this thing for the first time, and then sharing it with people is, I do. I think it's something we all long for.
So this kind of programming is, I hope you agree, worth supporting. And we're coming to you in the Member Drive now, of course, to ask for your support. Matthew, what your appeal to our listeners? Why should people support this program?
My pitch for public radio in general and Utah Public Radio specifically is that very simply, you just will not get this programming anywhere else. And we pay for things we value. We do so most of the time because we don't get that thing unless we pay for it. That's how the commercial nature of our economy works. I went to a coffee shop this morning. I paid for my coffee because I value my coffee. If you value this programming, you don't have to pay for it. You don't. We give it away for free. But you've got an obligation. And if you spend any amount of time on the public radio dial, and if you value what you get there, and if you don't value what you get there, I don't know why you would spend any amount of time on the public radio dial. It's time. It's time to pony up. And you don't have to pony up a lot. You know, nobody's going to, like when I started donating to public radio, I think it was like $2.50 a month. And I'm not that old that like $2.50 a month was actually a lot of money back then. It wasn't a lot of money back then, but that was what I could afford as a college student when I started donating to public radio. And nobody shamed me for it. Nobody told me, hey, you know, you should be doing more than that. They graciously accepted my check every month. And we graciously accept whatever you can afford because we know that people want to support this. And we just want to make it as easy as possible.
And it's fast and easy process. Today is New Member Day at UPR. We're a community of members and listeners, and we need new members. It's vital to the success of Utah Public Radio. So Lauren and Andy Keller have put up some money. They have generously pledged $1,000 for a new member challenge. So what we're looking for is 10 new member pledges throughout today in order to reach the $1,000 challenge pledge. If you're already a UPR member, you can help us to reach this goal by encouraging your friends, colleagues, coworkers, neighbors who listen to become members. We need 10 sustainer pledges, new members before to the end of business tonight, or to reach this $1,000 challenge pledge from Lauren and Andy Keller. So $1,000 will help. And if you're already a member, get it, you know, text, email, reach out to your neighbor who you know is listening, right? And who isn't a member yet, and encourage them.
And you'll make their day. It is honestly, it is one of the coolest feelings in the world the first time that you donate to public media and then you listen to public media, and it's a different experience. It's the experience of ownership and participation as opposed to just the experience of getting something. And public radio is great when it's free, right? But it is honestly a better experience when you've got a little skin in the game.
Yeah. And I think that's the key, right? You just feel more invested.
You do. You feel more invested. You feel more proud. You feel more angry, too. Public radio is not perfect. Public media is not perfect. The claims that people have that, there's this certain kind of media, it's public media, and it's really the best model. I was talking to a friend this morning, and, you know, like, we hate pledge breaks. We hate them as much as anybody else. They're a necessary part of what they do, but they're one of the imperfections of public radio. Nobody likes them, right? You get to be angry about that. You get to be righteously angry about that when you are a contributor. It totally changes everything. Mm-hmm. When a host says something that you disagree with, when a guest says something that you disagree with, when you think that the production qualities of a certain segment aren't up to standard, you actually get to be mad about that when you are a contributor to public radio. And if you're not a contributor to public radio, if you don't have that skin in the game, you can enjoy all of it, but you don't get the righteous anger.
it's like you have to vote to be able to complain about
that. You have to, right. We say this about a lot of things in life, right? Yeah. Like participation allows you a degree of ownership that you cannot have in any other way.
Yeah. So, Matthew, if you'd give us the phone number and the website here.
The phone number is 1-800-826-1495. Again, that's 1-800-826-1495. Or you can go online at upr.org. Either way, it's only going to take you a few minutes.
800-826-1495, 800-826-1495, or upr.org, upr.org. Don't forget the new member challenge. We really need new members, and here's your opportunity to really make a difference if you're a potential new member to Utah Public Radio. Lauren and Andy Keller put up $1,000. We're looking for 10, just 10 new members by the close of business day to get that $1,000. So we'll be counting that down. So if you're a potential new member, call now. Please call now. If you know someone who's a potential new member, maybe give them a gentle nudge.
Yeah, how do you think you do that? What's the best way to gently nudge someone?
I was trying to think. My original word was shove, and then I thought, that's too rude. That's rude. Don't shove. Nudge. Probably just the invitation, right?
Yeah.
Just text or email or, you know,
look,
social media.
We have a population in the state of Utah that knows how to knock on doors, right? Like, that knows how to make a gentle ask. And so if whether or not you have experience doing that or not, what I have found, and this is what I found as a reporter too, like, people are receptive to hearing your pleas, right? They are completely receptive to it. There is a lot less door slamming in this. And I don't mean like literal door slamming. You could certainly go to your neighbor who you don't know and knock on their door. But I'm talking about your neighbors who you do know. And I'm talking about your family members who you do know, right? People are a lot more receptive to that in this state than I think any other state I've ever been in.
Mm.
So don't be afraid. Ask
no,
your
don't
friend.
Be afraid. That's right. That's right. 800-826-1495. 800-826-1495 or upr.org. Upr.org. Well, we'll get ready for the next segment here. We've been talking about the mosquito. Fascinating science.
The deadliest animal in the world.
Yes, indeed.
After humans.
Killed more people. Yes.
Right.
Killed more people than anything else. I'm fascinated by the science of it, and the segment we heard, Timothy Weingard described what the mosquito does, and you know the machinery of how she punctures your skin and sucks out that blood.
Yeah.
Just fascinating
well,
stuff.
It's interesting you just use the female pronoun there,
yeah.
She, because those are the ones that get you.
Yeah.
It's the guys leave you alone.
Right? Yeah, that's right. She needs that for reproduction.
That's right.
And
that's right.
So.
There's a segment in my book about mosquitoes and about how a lot of scientists have decided that they are not necessary. They don't really fit an ecological niche. And so there is a growing campaign to eradicate genetically. Through genetic manipulation, through something called gene drive, the mosquito, and in particular, the species of mosquito that carry malaria. And it's absolutely fascinating to listen to the science behind this, because there is almost no other context in which ecologists, in which biologists, in which people who are ecologically and scientifically minded would say, hey, you know what, we should get rid of a species.
Mm.
It is fascinating to listen to scientists talk about mosquitoes, because they're a little reticent, but they're not a lot reticent.
Right.
It's really amazing and really interesting, and maybe the first, you know, some species of mosquitoes that carry malaria may be the first species that we push out of our environment intentionally. Not accidentally, not because we overhunted them, not because we polluted their environment, not accidentally, which is how we've pushed tens of thousands of other species into extinction, but we might push certain species of mosquitoes into extinction intentionally. And the shift in ideology and thinking that it takes to kind of wrap your mind around what that means is fascinating to me. And a little bit terrifying, too.
Yeah, it's conflicted feelings, right?
Absolutely. Well, because look, I've spent a lot of time in Africa. I've spent a lot of time in places where children still die of malaria. This is a killer that takes hundreds of thousands of lives every year, mostly children. And so, like, there's a very big part of me that goes, look, if we could get rid of this, with this relatively simple thing that already we really have the science to do. We don't have the political willpower to do, but we really have the science to do this. We could do it. What's the thing keeping us from doing it? It's this reticence to actually intentionally push something out of extinction. At the same time that we are pushing all kinds of other things into extinction by our collective actions. Oh, it's absolutely a fascinating moral and ethical discussion that if you don't know about, you should definitely read this book and listen to this conversation.
Yeah, definitely. You can find these conversations at upr.org, upr.org. We're giving you best of Access Utah today with focus on science. And we have with us Matthew LaPlante. 800-826-1495. Is the place to go, 800-826-1495 or upr.org. So Matthew, if you're at Fall Renewal, we'd love to have you on board. In addition to that, if you're a potential new member, we really need you, because we need 10 new members today to reach this $1,000 from Lauren and Andy Keller. So maybe the number once again, Matthew, and then we'll go to break.
The number once again is 1-800-826-1495 or upr.org.
UPR.org. Let's go to break. We'll have more with Matthew LaPlante and science on Access Utah following this break. Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. It's the best of Access Utah, and it's science here at UPR on Access Utah. We try to do as much science as we can, and that is the request we get most often, do more science. So if you have ideas, we are certainly open to that. We did a program on Yellowstone supervolcanoes, for example, on listener request. Just get those to us, upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Place to go to pledge your support for this kind of programming. We do need your support to pay for this these programs. Keep us on track and to make our UPR community strong. upr.org, upr.org is place to go, upr.org. Let's jump into another excerpt from a conversation that I had in June on Access Utah with Emeritus Professor Emeritus of Watershed Sciences at USU, Wayne Wurzbach. He's an expert on the Great Salt Lake. There's worry about the lake drying up, and we got talking about that and the fascinating brine shrimp. So here's a bit of my conversation with Wayne Wurzbach. We're talking about the Great Salt Lake. It's the largest saline lake in the Western Hemisphere. We've got it right here in Utah to enjoy. And we have an expert with us, Wayne Wurzbach. He is Professor Emeritus of Watershed Sciences at Utah State University. We're talking about this because it's interesting to talk about, and also because the Great Salt Lake is slowly drying up. So how do you counteract that? That's one of the questions. It occurs to me that I led us into a kind of a discussion of at least the implications being why in the wide world would you go and recreate on the near the lake, the gnats, the flies, the rotten egg smell. Let's begin this segment with why would you want to? And, you know, this is a devil's advocate question. I love Antelope Island and love being there, but there are a lot of attractions.
Yeah, so you know, one of the biggest attractions that we alluded to earlier is the birds, so that you have a lot in the bird watching community that really enjoy going out around Great Salt Lake and the adjoining wetlands and viewing birds. And so that's one of the big values to the lake. You also have waterfowl hunters that utilize the lake and the adjoining wetlands in the fall for hunting. It's unique to a certain extent because we don't have that many saline lakes around. And so going out and wading in the Great Salt Lake and looking at the brine shrimp in the water, and which are, you know, these invertebrates, and they're about a quarter of an inch long. We have invertebrates that play kind of similar roles in Bear Lake, for example, but they're so small they're really kind of hard to see with the naked eye. So you have some unique characteristics there. That recreational component is quite valuable. Other values of the lake, backing up, about 10 years ago, a group estimated the economic value of the Great Salt Lake, and it came out to be about $1.3 billion. The biggest share of that is for mineral extraction. So we have Magnesium Corporation of America, Compass Minerals makes largely fertilizers. Other people make titanium that they extract from the salts in the lake. So that's the biggest component of that $1.3 billion. Recreation was I think, the next largest component. And then one you mentioned was the brine shrimp. So these brine shrimp aren't harvested directly as the adults, although they used to be for fish food for aquaria. But the big industry now, and it's about a $60 million a year industry, is to harvest the cysts or the resting eggs of these brine shrimp. And these are tiny little things, less than a millimeter, kind of fit on a pinhead. A lot of those cysts float on the surface of the lake. And so in the fall, we have dozens and dozens of boats that go out. They use spotter planes to spot and find the concentrations of these cysts. And then they go out and harvest those. Take them back, dry them out, put them in cans, and they're sold worldwide. And the Great Salt Lake is the largest producer worldwide. to the aquaculture industry. And the biggest component of that aquaculture industry are prawns. And so I certainly know that prawns have got a lot more prominent in the market in the last decades and cheaper. And so a lot of those will come from Indonesia or South America. And the baby prawns, when they're starting out, need a high energy, high protein source of food. So these cysts that can sit on the shelves for years, if you put them in a salinity about like seawater, and in a couple of days, they hatch out into something called a nopuli, a tiny little invertebrate, about a millimeter long. And the prawns or other finfish feed on those and grow quickly and get to a size where they can make it in the ponds. I was in Indonesia a couple of years ago just for a vacation, but when we would fly in and out of different coastal cities, you could see thousands and thousands of acres of ponds where they're growing these prawns. So that's a very major industry there.
Now, are these actual related to shrimp? They're very small size, but is this an actual?
Taxonomically, it's fairly closely related. If you look at the broad spectrum of humans down to bacteria, the brine shrimp and the shrimp that you would have in the oceans are fairly closely related. Your crustaceans. They reproduce by producing these eggs. One interesting aspect of these eggs, I mentioned they can stay on the shelves for years in a dried state. We took a sediment core out of the bottom of the lake and sliced it up and found out the dates. And we took the eggs that had been deposited in those cores and hatched them out. And we hatched brine shrimp eggs that were over 200 years old. In the lab, so they're extremely resistant.
actually hatched.
They hatched. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And so that's the reason why this is amazing fish food. So that's the reason for this $60 million industry,
right?
So I want to, before we have about 5 minutes left, I want to get back to at the end talking about solutions to reducing the diversion of flows into the lake. Is there a bullet point? Is there something maybe I haven't asked you that would be very interesting to people about the lake?
Well, it's a beautiful place. As you mentioned in the introduction, you can go to certain places and you won't see any other people. And I really enjoy going out on the lake and sampling, and you get not very far out from shore and you feel a little bit like you're on a different planet. Mm-hmm. It's really remote. And a lot of people like that. I've had some graduate students that go out there and go, oh, no, this isn't the place for me. So maybe it's not for everybody, but it is beautiful. And Antelope Island is one of the easiest access points to go view it. Another interesting place is the Spiral Jetty, a land art project that was built decades ago. And you go out to the north arm of the lake, and it's there's some hills nearby, and you can get up and look down on the spiral jetty that juts out into the lake. Right now, that the spiral jetty is on dry land because the lake is down so far.
Interesting.
Other times, the water comes up around it. And so you can view it from the hills above, and then you can walk out on it, unless in real high water years it could be submerged. So that's a real interesting place to visit. And if you haven't been out there, I highly recommend you go visit there.
That's from my conversation in June on Access Utah with Wayne Wordspaugh, who's Professor Emeritus of Watershed Sciences at Utah State University. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and I'm joined by Matthew LaPlante, who's Associate Professor of Journalism at Utah State University, longtime friend of the station, and host of Undisciplined, which you can hear Fridays at 2 p.m. here on Utah Public Radio.
The last few years of my career as a journalist have been largely, not entirely, but largely dedicated to communicating about science. And one of the ways is through this program that we concocted, which you can only hear live on Utah Public Radio, Undisciplined, although you can get it as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And the idea of the show is that we bring two scientists together from completely different fields. We interview them separately, and then we turn on the microphones, and we all engage in this roundtable conversation. And it is absolutely amazing what happens when you get a physicist and a geologist talking together, when you get a chemist and a microbiologist. Because what happens is that they talk to each other like normal human beings. Because even though they might have a lot of letters behind their names, they don't live in each other's world. So they have to step out of their silos, but they still talk to each other like intelligent human beings, because they are intelligent human beings. But they talk in this way that's super accessible. They ask questions that are just like the questions that anyone would ask. And then they start building these connections. And we have had people walk out of this studio, the studio that we're sitting in right now, going, hey, you know what? We should work together. And we make fast scientific friends. It's really so much fun.
Mm-hmm. That must be gratifying. Yeah,
it sure is.
That's the best when we had a few of those experiences with the StoryCorps One Small Step project this summer, where you get two strangers talking across the divide. And we had a few instances where people walked out of that interview going in strangers and coming out friends, essentially, or a budding friendship.
Right.
That's a wonderful thing, those connections. So, Matthew, I'll give the number, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495, or you can go to upr.org. Become a member, or especially we need you to be a new member to Utah Public Radio. We're heading toward this new member challenge. Lauren and Andy Keller have put up $1,000, and we're looking for 10 new members. So it's a bit of a conundrum, and you may have noticed listening that, if I don't pledge, if I don't become a member, probably we're still going to have UPR tomorrow, right? It's probably, the sky didn't fall, right?
Right.
If enough of us have that attitude, then probably the sky will fall. I wonder what you would say about that. Why should I give, even because my neighbor probably is giving, right?
Yeah. You should do it for the same reason. Look, if you don't do anything for your community at all, you don't volunteer, you don't go to church and tithe, you don't donate to any organizations, you're not part of a road cleanup team. If you don't do anything at all, you know what? Don't pledge to UPR. Don't pledge to public radio. Don't pledge to public media, because you don't do anything at all. You're not the kind of human being who does this. Okay, so you're a freeloader. Okay, all right. That, like, you've decided that your world is such that you have made the conscientious decision that you're not a contributor. You're just a consumer, and you're going to take whatever free you can get. Okay, all right, fine. But if you give to your church, if you give to any kind of charity, if you subscribe to the newspaper, even though you know you don't need to subscribe to the newspaper because, you can get it online for free. If you volunteer as a soccer coach or a volleyball coach, you are this kind of person. And that is most of us. You are this kind of person. So then you just have to say, like, am I in a position where I can give also, if you don't already, to public media, to public radio, to Utah Public Radio? Am I in a position to do that? To a small extent, even. Because I am that kind of person. And if you're that kind of person, and you're not already giving to public media, we know that you're already giving to other organizations and other causes. You're giving of yourself. You're giving of your pocketbook. Okay? But you do that for a reason. And if you are in a position also to do that for public radio, you absolutely should. And all of the benefits that you feel from volunteering, from paying your tithes, from, working on the road cleanup team, whatever else you are doing to give of yourself where you don't have to, all of that exists when you give to public radio too. All of those rewards come. And as we were saying before, the other reward is that you get to feel ownership on what you're hearing right here every single day.
And the number to do this is 800-826-1495, or you can go to upr.org, upr.org. So we've had with us in studio today Matthew LaPlante, Associate Professor of Journalism at Utah State University. Matthew, it's been a pleasure as always. Maybe on the way out here, you could give us the phone number and website again?
Yeah, the phone number is 1-800-826-1495. The website is upr.org, and let me tell you, when you donate, this is the coolest thing that happens now. They give you the option to just have it roll, right? You don't have to call every time,
right?
Every pledge break, right? You don't have to do, like, when I first started donating to public radio, I had to, like, every month I had to write my check. You know, and I got a little bill in the mail, and it was, you know, and I did it just like paying my utility bill. You don't have to do that anymore. You give them your card once. And up until the point that card cancels, you're good to go. And you can feel good. Like, you don't have to do much. You just have to let them make that. You just have to check that box and let them take it out of your checking, your savings, or whatever account, your debit account every month. And then, this is the coolest thing. This has happened twice to me now, where my card has been canceled for whatever reason. I don't hear from the bank first. I hear from UPR first.
There you go. That's good. That's a nice community.
It's a great community. It's like they're taking care of me. And they'll take care of you. 1-800-826-1495 or upr.org.
Oh, thanks, Matthew. It's a pleasure as always. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.